2 weeks ago, in our service, we focused on Jesus' parables of the talent. And today, what I want to preach about, I'm so excited about, I decided I want to preach before we sing our second set, Alabaster Story, as I mentioned earlier. 2 weeks ago, the parable of the talents. That God gives every one of us who are His disciples, who are believers, who have asked Jesus to forgive us for our sins, He does something supernaturally, and He calls us, and He gives us certain opportunities. You might think in terms of time. We all have 24 hours in the day. We certainly think in terms of abilities and talents and certain things that we might be able to do that God's allowed for us to do. We certainly think of treasure. God gives us possessions, and He gives us a responsibility to be good stewards of them. And it's up to us to use that mix of what God gives us for His glory. All of us have that opportunity and that unique opportunity to say, God, whatever You have put in my heart and my life, and You have put in this circle of my influence, I'll do my best to live out to serve You and to love You, to make the most of every opportunity. One of the scriptures we read is, make the most of every opportunity. God gives us all that privilege of serving Him. And so I've said before, and I'll say one more time now, don't waste your life. Don't waste your life. It's precious to God. That's got to be the most beautiful baby over there at the moment. If you could just see her, my goodness. We've talked about some of Jesus' parables, how deep and meaningful they are. Jesus was an incredible teacher. He also teaches us through stories. And beautiful stories that are found in the Gospels that tell us about the heart of God. Jesus' interaction with people, His care for them, the way He treated people, His attitude, His words. How did He react? How did Jesus react to people? Our story today is one of those that shows, I think, each of those things. A story that's interestingly told in all four Gospels. There's not that many stories that are told in all four Gospels, but this is one of them. In fact, all four writers have their own telling of the story. All have a little bit different details, although Matthew and Mark are mostly the same. It's told in different details, and it looks like it possibly may be that there were two events that took place very similar in some of the information, but at different times, at different places. Two of the Gospels tell the story of alabaster that the perfume was poured on Jesus' head. The other two Gospels record that it was poured on Jesus' feet. Luke's telling is early in Jesus' ministry, whereas Matthew and Mark specifically tie it to the last day of Jesus' life. Taken together, the alabaster story is an incredible story. I'd recommend sometime when you had time, just open the four Gospels and read all four stories of the alabaster. We're going to read from Mark chapter 14 today. If you want to read these verses with me, Mark chapter 14, going to read, start at verse 3. While He was in Bethany, reclining at the table in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume made of pure nard. She broke the jar and poured the perfume on His head. Some of those present were saying indignantly to one another, "Why waste this perfume? It could have been sold for more than a year's wages and the money given to the poor." And they rebuked her harshly. "Leave her alone," said Jesus. "Why are you bothering her? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, and you can help them anytime you want, but you will not always have me. She did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial. Truly, I tell you, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. The two main characters, of course, of this story are this woman who brought an alabaster jar filled with perfume and Jesus. But there's also others that are watching. In each of the Gospels, we have a little bit different details. We have a telling of the disciples of Jesus that are there and they're watching. We also have a host who has been inattentive to the needs of his guest. In another of the stories, we read about the Pharisees, the teachers of the law that are there in the home when this meal takes place and when this alabaster story takes place. And so you have a lot of people watching Jesus on this occasion. A lot of people who see what happens and they see the reaction of Jesus. The context of Mark's telling of the story is that this is literally Jesus' last public interaction before the Last Supper. It's in Mark chapter 14. Also in Mark chapter 14 is the story of the Last Supper. And so Mark gives us this last story before Jesus has the Last Supper, goes to Gethsemane, is arrested, and goes to the cross. It's special. Just before this story, Mark tells us that the chief priest is plotting against Jesus, and they're trying to find a way to trap him. And just after the story, we have the telling of Judas Iscariot, who went to receive his money so that he could betray Jesus. And so between the animosity of the religious leaders and the betrayal of Judas, we have this beautiful story of alabaster. And so we know, number one, Jesus is in his last days here. Literally one day. It could be the same day or the day before, but he's in his last day. And this might be Jesus' last public meal. This might be the last time that he interacts with the religious leaders and those neighbors that may have been there. We know that he's in the town of Bethany, which is a little town not far from Jerusalem, only about 2 miles from Jerusalem, the same town that Jesus had raised Lazarus from the dead. Bethany was a place apparently that Jesus was often, and you traveled through Bethany to get to Jerusalem by the Mount of Olives anyway, and so it was the main road. You went through Bethany, and you went up over the Mount of Olives, and you came down into Jerusalem. Jesus had been there many times. He probably knew about everyone that lived in Bethany. It's very likely that he could have. We certainly know that he knew very well Mary and Martha and Lazarus and how connected he was. But we're also told here that he's in the home of someone else, Simon the leper in Bethany. Likely everyone in the area knew who Jesus was and Jesus knew them. We also see in this story a great love that was expressed. We see in this story sacrifice. We see emotion. We see someone willing to take a risk to show how much she cared about Jesus. Boldness. She went right into Simon the leper's house and presented her offering to Jesus. We see in her a genuineness. We see in her that she had such love for Jesus that she wasn't going to let anybody stop her. She wasn't going to ask for anybody for permission. She was just going to go and do what was in her heart to love Jesus. She shows us in this story how highly valued Jesus is. That's for me one of the takeaways of this story is Jesus was highly valued. And seeing in this woman where Jesus was in her life, where Jesus was in the list of priorities, in the list of things that she had, in the list of relationships. For this woman, Jesus was highly valued. My guess is, when I read the Gospels and I read everything that happened to Jesus, he had some good things that happened and a lot of hard things that happened that he dealt with, but my guess is this might have been. It was certainly one of the greatest blessings that Jesus probably received in his ministry. There may have been many others too, but when I read the gospel, this is the one that stands out to me, a blessing. Someone who came to give to Jesus, to pour out who they were. And it meant a great deal to Jesus. You think of Jesus' emotions. Jesus was fully man and fully God. He had emotions, he had feelings, and he dealt with them much like we do. He took on himself full humanity. He knew the cross was coming. He just had talked about how he was going to die. He knew that Judas was going to betray him. He knew that he was going to die for the sins of the world. And here, just before all this happens, this extravagant love is poured out on him. What a great gift. Number one, when I think about this story, I just think about the incredible gift that it is. It's a great gift of love that she gave. It was an expensive gift. It was a gift that cost this woman much. I don't know how many resources she had. We don't know that part of it, but we know that what she gave was very expensive. It was described as that. It was an incredible gift. The gift itself, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to describe this gift, but number one, you just think about how expensive it was. Number one, it was carried in an alabaster jar. And there was a lot of variety of alabaster jars. There were very plain ones that were less expensive and easy to buy. There were alabaster jars that were tall and thin, alabaster jars that were thicker and larger. There was a variety. There were some that were very, very expensive themselves and some that were not so much. But whatever the case, she had this alabaster jar and she had it filled with very expensive perfume. It says here, very expensive perfume made of pure nard. One of the Gospels compares it to a year's wages. And here it's also could have been sold for more than a year's wages. That's a lot of money. That's a lot for anybody. I don't know how wealthy she was. Maybe she was very wealthy, and maybe there was the gift was not as hard for her to bring, or maybe it was all that she had, but a year's wages. Money could have been spent for the poor, was said of it. This money was so much that her criticizer said she should have taken that money and given it to the poor. And so we know it was an expensive gift. But we also know about this gift that it came from her heart. It came from her heart, from her love for Jesus. She saw a need. She somehow must have known. Maybe she was there all the time, or she was watching as a neighbor from the outside, that Jesus had gone into the home of Simon the leper. And according to the tradition, and one of the other gospel tells us, when Jesus responded and his words recorded that time, he says that I came into the home and no one came and anointed my head or my feet. They didn't welcome me as a host should and would. And she saw that. And so she went and she got her alabaster jar. Makes me think she lived close. She might have been a neighbor or lived very near, but she saw what had happened. She loved Jesus so much, and she saw that Jesus was probably hot and tired, and so she went and she got her alabaster jar and she brought it. She saw Jesus and she loved him. We're told in another story that when she anointed Jesus, that she began to weep. And as she was behind Jesus in that telling of the story, that her tears were coming down. She was so overwhelmed by love that she took that box, that alabaster jar, and she broke it to get every drop out of that, to put it on Jesus. It came from the heart. It reminds me of how important our giving is, that it comes from our heart. It's not we give because we feel we have to, or someone's watching, or when it's time to do our taxes, we can look back and see what we did. But everything that we give should come from the heart and should be given. She broke her jar. She gave everything she had, every drop of it. Not only did she give from the heart, but she gave completely. It was a complete giving that she gave, every drop. But also I see that her gift was misunderstood. Even though her heart was right, the people around her were not right. They saw the wrong things. They reacted in a way that showed a lack of depth. They were indignant, the scriptures say. They rebuked her harshly. So here this woman came. Out of love in her heart, she gave her very best. And yet those around her did not value that and see that. Instead, they had a spirit and an attitude of criticism. They thought they knew better, but they didn't. Jesus knew her heart. I'm reminded that God always knows our heart when we give. Every time we give to any need, to our family, to a ministry, to someone we don't know, whenever we give, God sees our hearts and He sees who we are and what we feel and believe. Whatever you give to, whatever amount, it's the heart that matters most. When you give your offering on Sunday mornings, or you mail it in, or you're online, or you pass the guy with a bell at Christmas time, or you see a need out there and you meet it, the most important thing about giving is the heart. That to me is the number one lesson of this story, is how important your heart is to God. How important, it's not the amount you give, it's where your heart is. God always knows our hearts. 2 Corinthians chapter 9 says these words, "Remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to bless you abundantly, so that in all things at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work." God cares deeply about your heart. Jesus saw the heart of this woman. And how did He react? How did Jesus respond? You have all these disciples and Pharisees and their negative reaction. I don't know about Simon the leper. I don't know if he just watched and maybe he learned. But how did Jesus react? Number one, Jesus had a grateful spirit. He had a grateful spirit. Jesus teaches us about having a thankful spirit. And here He demonstrates that. I also see about Jesus that He had a very protective spirit. Boy, did He react to this. You know, it's interesting just to study in the Gospels what Jesus reacts strongly to. You know, we've thought about, read about, preached about the anger of Jesus. And when did He get angry? Well, I tell you, every time I see Jesus react, and it's because there's injustice. It's because someone is being harsh. It's because somebody is being unmerciful. It's because someone basically has an attitude of destroying a brother or sister by their attitude and their spirit. Jesus reacted to this. It was amazing. He was protective. He said, "Leave her alone." That's Jesus' first reaction publicly to what happens in this story. First words He speaks, "Leave her alone." You ever felt that way when you've seen somebody, the way they treat somebody else? Maybe somebody's harsh words, and you just want to say in your spirit, "Leave them alone. Stop being a bully." Jesus reacts. Mark said it like this, "Leave her alone," said Jesus. And the way Mark writes it, it makes me think that there was a pause there. Jesus reacts. "Leave her alone," said Jesus. And then he went on and he spoke more. Do we react that way when someone is being harshly treated? This story is about loving compassion and kindness and thankfulness, among many other things. There is a time for righteous indignation. If you want to know the master of righteous indignation, it's Jesus. Look at how he reacts when people are treated poorly. He was protective. He also had a deep perspective that was amazing. He saw past the people and the gift, and he saw past the traditions and the poor, and he saw the depth and the deeper issues. Verse 6 says, "Leave her alone," said Jesus. "Why are you bothering her? She has done a beautiful thing." Jesus simply received the gift of love, was thankful. And then in verse 7, he went on to teach. "The poor you will always have with you, and you can help them anytime you want, but you will not always have me." The depth of what Jesus was saying there. I think Jesus was saying that, and it applies to the church today. We live in a different day than when this woman brought her alabaster gift. She was able to come and take that jar and break it and actually anoint Jesus. That's beautiful. We don't have that privilege today. Unless something changes, he comes back and we're allowed to do that. I don't know, but the poor you will always have with you. And you can help them anytime you want. That's point number 3 to me of what I take from this story. Jesus was saying, in your day, you're going to have people to take care of. You're going to have people that have needs all around you. You won't have any trouble finding them. You can help them anytime you want. Think what he says to the church today. Today's the day for us to help people who are needy, the poor, the hurting. "You will not always have me." She did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial. Again, he was looking at a perspective that was deeper than what those around him saw. There's so much in these words. But let's go to Jesus' words of the future in this story. Verse 9 says, "They truly are beautiful. Truly, I tell you," Jesus said, "wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her." Wow, this is a prophecy that Jesus gives. And Jesus doesn't give us a lot of prophecies. He does give us some, and they're very important, especially for the church and his disciples in the future. But here he gives a prophecy about this woman, and that's very special. "I tell you, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her." What a prophecy. All right, will you fast forward in your mind to 1949? I want to tell you the story of the Church of the Nazarene and alabaster. It was 71 years ago, that a woman named Elizabeth Vellum, who was a pastor's wife at the time, and she had a heart for missions, and she was involved in helping the Church of the Nazarene to develop their missionary program. And she was asked if there's a way that she could come up with an idea that would help the church to promote missions. And so she began to work on the idea, and according to the story, this alabaster story came to her. And she began to think about Jesus' words, about how wherever the gospel is preached all around the world, what she has done will be remembered. And so this precious lady, 71 years ago, proposed an alabaster offering in the Church of the Nazarene. She suggested that every Nazarene church in the denomination at the time would pick a Sunday and receive an offering that would go to build churches in areas of the world where the funds were not available. And it would be done in memory of this story, this beautiful story. And so in 1949, that began. And every Nazarene church who has participated in Alabaster, and that's been most of them over the last 70 years, has received an annual offering for missions simply to build churches, schools, and hospitals in areas where they're not available. Everything that comes in that offering would go toward the building of those schools, hospitals, and churches. Since then, I read statistics as of 2 years ago, over $100 million has been given to missions through an annual offering for Alabaster. Our church has participated in Alabaster from just about 1949. You may know that our church began 75 years ago, roughly 1945, 46, 47, as different stages of the church began. And I was able to find a record in the early 1950s, and they may have existed before, that in the early 1950s, our church received an Alabaster offering and at that time sent it to the district. And every year since then, our church has received an Alabaster offering. I want to invite you in a few minutes to help us receive an Alabaster offering. And I'm going to ask you today, this isn't for our church. This isn't for any of our bills, any of our budget. But I'm going to ask you today, if you would give an offering of love from your heart for other people somewhere far from here. Alabaster is a beautiful story. Other churches and other Christian ministries have programs called Alabaster with all kinds of different ideas, but the Church of the Nazarene, Alabaster represents giving an offering for someone far away out of the love of your heart. And today, I just want to invite us to celebrate together the privilege that God gives us to give, and invite you in a few minutes to receive that offering.